This is the Marketing Podcast Network.
Welcome to Uncorking a Story, the podcast that introduces you to the rich world of storytellers who share their personal journeys, creative processes, and the stories behind their stories, one conversation at a time. I'm your host, Mike Carlin, and I'm thrilled to be part of your writing journey. If you're an aspiring writer, a literary enthusiast, or simply someone who believes in the transformative power of words, you've come to the right place. Every week, we'll pop the cork on the world of successful storytellers and give you a healthy pour of inspiration, insight, and empowerment. My mission is to help writers like you realize your full potential through the transformative and therapeutic power of writing. Whether you're just starting your literary voyage or looking to refine your craft, I'm here to provide you with the knowledge, inspiration, and encouragement you need to embark on your own storytelling adventure. So, are you ready to uncork your story and let your creativity flow? Uncorking a Story is about to begin. Sit back, relax, and let the transformative magic of storytelling whisk you away. Welcome to Uncorking a Story. Lori Brand is a lifting enthusiast, group fitness instructor, yoga teacher, and software quality engineer. In past lives, she's been a gymnast, dancer, Playboy model, and bodybuilder. Her time in the body wars trenches led her realization that getting strong rather than shrinking is the way out. In an effort to spread the word, she'd had articles written and published in Strong Fitness Magazine, T Nation, Inside Fitness Magazine, Define Fitness Magazine, and more. She joins me today on Uncorking a Story to discuss her career and debut novel, Bodies to Die For. Welcome to Uncorking a Story, Lori.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Lori, I'm excited to have you here, and I'm curious, where does your story as an author begin?
So I'm actually going to say that my story begins when I was 10 years old. When I was 10 years old, my dance instructor, in an effort to lose weight, had her jaw wired shut, and it left a huge impression on me. My mom was driving me to dance one day, and in the car, just kind of offhandedly said, Barb's going to have Jill. Jill was her assistant. Jill's going to be teaching today. She'll be teaching for the next few months. Barb will still be there. She'll be off in the corner. She'll have a notepad and she'll take notes and she'll just communicate with Jill via the notes. And I said, why? Right? And I said, Barb had her jaw wired shut. And I was just like, what? What are you talking about? Right? And she was like, she did. I said, why? Right? So Barb wanted to lose some weight. And I was asking her all these questions, but we lived pretty close to the dance studio. And all of a sudden, we were pulling out of we still had more questions. My mom was like, no, I'll let you go to dance. And don't go in there asking people because it'll just make her embarrassed. So don't go in there, right? Or don't say anything. And so I went in there. And, and the thing that really got me is all these other moms are dropping their daughters off, too. And so some were walking them in. And like nobody was freaking out. Like this was like everybody was like cool with it. And I went to my dance class, and sure enough, Barb's off in a corner on a chair taking notes. And so I watched this go down over the next few months. Right, Barb starts to shrink. I'm just mesmerized by this. Right, this has my attention. And Barb starts to get smaller and smaller and smaller. Periodically, she sucks out a protein shake and her cheekbones pop out. And anyway, one day after maybe 3 months or something, I did something where I must have done something wrong. I don't know. But she points at me and she curls her finger, come here, right? And so I go over there, but she's, tap, 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 tap. And I have to get up close to hear her because her jaw's wearing shut. She's going to talk through her gritted jaw. And I don't remember what she told me, but when she was done explaining or telling me whatever it was, I realized that there weren't any other moms around. Yeah, there weren't any other kids. There's nobody to rat me out. And so I could like ask her, right? And so I said, is it true you had your jaw wired shut? And she said, yeah. And I asked if it was possible to see the wires. And she said, yeah. And I asked her to show me. So she hooks her finger in her jaw and she pulls it back. And I can see the silver wires zigzagging up and down between her upper and lower teeth. And it was like robotic sharp fangs. And so that left a huge imprint on me, right? Like how important was it to be thin? it was that important, right? And from there, it just kind of went on. I was a dancer. I was a gymnast. A lot of my friends had some pretty significant eating issues and things. One of my friends was hospitalized for bulimia. When I saw her, I never heard the word until she was actually hospitalized for it. And when I went and I saw her, this was like when she was like 16, 17. And still a long time ago, I'm 54. And she was in this ward with other people with eating disorders, and some of them had anorexia. And she had told me before her roommate came in, she said, "Joe, my roommate comes in, don't take it personally if she's kind of mean to you, you know, or she seems like she's angry. She's just angry in general. It's nothing personal. She just doesn't want to be here, you know. She's been here before for anorexia, and she's really pissed that she got brought back." And, you know, I'm thinking, you know, I mean, my friend looks no worse for wear. It's probably not that big a deal, and parents are kind of overreactive. And then the girl walked. Oh, and she, my friend also tells me that apparently the anorexics look down on the bulimics, right? Because my friend is bulimic and she's out of control, whereas the anorexics are very, like, they have their shit together and, like, are really controlled, right? And so this girl's, like, looking down on my friend. And so then the girl walks in the room. And my very first thought when I saw her was that she's going to die.
Yeah.
She was so emaciated, right? I could see her skull through her face. And it, you know, up until that point, you know, this was like the 80s, right? Where I thought, you know, you couldn't be too thin or too rich. And that was like my first real, you sure can be too thin, right? And like, but I didn't understand why somebody would do that to themselves. And so just from there, the stuff has been on my radar. And then when I was in college, you know, strippers, like a side gig. And now, you know, now you're monetizing, you know, what you look like. So if you ever thought, if you ever had any illusions on how you look, right, the Mighty Dollar is going to let you know. So anyway, this just goes on and on. You know, I eventually graduated from college. I decided to stay a stripper because it pays more than it's going to be to, like, get a job. Despite that I had a chemistry degree. And so I married my husband, and eventually we moved to Chicago. You know, I get pregnant, and then I'm a stay-at-home mom. And so you'd think that now as a stay-at-home mom, it would be such a big deal. But, like, all the friends that I hung out with, it was still a big deal. Like, you know, get a group of women together, everybody's going to talk about that they want to lose 5-10 pounds. And then even eventually when my kids all went to school and I decided to actually get, like, a legit job, I went back to school. I got a master's in biomedical engineering, and now I work as an engineer. You still get a group of women together, and I hear from my friends who I work with, right, where her engineers have got, like, legit good jobs, and they worry about, you know, it's a big insecurity. And then I also got into competitive bodybuilding for a while, and I'm hanging out with people who have phenomenal physiques, right? Just completely phenomenal physiques. And you know, I'm listening to some of them say, like, "Oh my God, I'm so fat." And I'm looking at them and I'm just thinking, like, this is crazy. And then somewhere along the way, I don't know what it was, but I started lifting weights more for made that change to, like, lifting for myself and getting strong. And it was that realization that getting strong was the answer. And I finally was able to kind of, like, go of that, that, like, shrinking mentality, right? That, like, of like what I was going to look like for everybody else. And instead I just wanted to get strong. And it was, like, such a cage door opening that I wanted to share it with others. And so I started writing for fitness magazines and all this and that. And then somewhere, in January of 2020 is when Jillian Michaels, she was on BuzzFeed, and somebody had asked her what she thought about Lizzo as a body positive person. And Lizzo had said, why are we celebrating her body? Because it's not going to be great if she has diabetes. And I don't know if you remember this. I don't know if you follow this kind of thing, but I'm telling you, Instagram completely blew up. Like, everybody came down, looks so hard on Jillian Michaels. And, you know, but I do see I mean, I actually love Lizzo, and I can completely understand why some people got really upset, because Lizzo has done wonders for many people's comfort with their body, or for their the idea that there isn't just one perfect size, or that, you know, you don't have to wait until you're a certain size to wear like a really cool dress or to live your life or whatever. But then other people, you were saying, well, you have to quit normalizing obesity. And then this whole thing was going on. And then not too much later, Adele lost a bunch of weight and posted her picture on Instagram on her birthday. And all sorts of people came down on her. They were disappointed in her. And, you know, like, why should she have to justify it? Like, what she looks, it was all this stuff was swirling around, and it just made me really, it made me want to write about it, you know, to kind of probe all sides of it, because, you know, the body positive thing started with good intentions. The wellness thing started with good intentions. But now you've got women ripping on each other on both sides, you know, and just, it was mostly women, you know, just tearing each other down. And I hated to see that. And I decided to, and there's no need to tear each other down, because, like, you know, the whole strong women, you lift each other up, right? And we don't need to judge each other for how they're handling their bodies or for what's best for them. And it just made me want to write about it and wanted to probe how all this one-sidedness could, like, potentially result in a disastrous thing. So that's where it all came from.
That is the long answer to the
show. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Great.
Okay. Like,
it just highlights, I mean, from a very young age, this is what we're exposed to. And, you know, I think for guys, you know, I think there is a difference between, like, boys and girls, like, at that age level. Like, I was sort of conscious of, you know, what an athletic physique was. And maybe that I didn't have one when I was a young kid. But it didn't, like I didn't really take it to heart as much, I guess.
Yeah.
But you're at 10 years old, you're seeing your dance instructor, which is like a role model of yours.
Totally.
Have a jaw wired shut. And this is this is elective. This is not like.
She did on purpose.
I thought she's got like TMJ and this is like the solution for.
Yeah.
And that's really extreme, but that stays with you. And then.
Very much.
And then, I remember the Jillian Michaels thing and Lizzo.
Yeah.
And like in my head, I'm like, I really don't think Jillian Michaels was malicious about that. Right?
She wasn't, right? She wasn't. But she, I mean, she had hate. She had death threats. She had, I mean, it was crazy, the amount of vitriol that came her way as a result. She apologized within 24 hours. She apologized, but people just did not let her live it down, man. It really, really, and there was a lot of hatred for her.
But she does point out the truth. It's not like there's an untruth in her statement. Like, it would be terrible if Lizzo got diabetes.
Yeah.
Anybody, like, doesn't take care of their health.
Yeah. And it just really made me want to just kind of probe that. And it's, you know, especially with the Adele thing, right, where she lost a bunch of weight and people were disappointed in her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why does she owe you her body?
Well, I remember.
You know,
Like, this is completely different. Back in the 60s, Bob Dylan, you know, was a folk musician.
Okay.
When he showed up at the Newport Folk Festival with an electric guitar, everybody shunned him. Like, how could you do this to us?
Yeah.
People are projecting themselves onto her.
Yeah.
Is kind of, you know, she did a great job by getting healthy. And I know Kelly Clarkson is doing this thing right now.
Yeah.
But what I really loved about your story, just to bring it back to you, because we're uncorking your story, not Jillian. Is, you know, kind of your change in mindset, you know, fitness and diet as a way of gaining something versus losing something. And from what you told me, from what I understand, you know, you're gaining fitness, you're gaining strength. You're not trying to lose something.
Right. It's like a complete change in mindset. I think that, you know, instead of looking at like what you can't eat so that you shrink, you instead look at what you eat as, you know, it's to nourish you, right? To support your health, to support your body, because you want to get strong. You know, you have that goal of, you know, I want to be able to do a pull up. I want to be able to do 2 pull-ups, 3 pull-ups, or I want to be able to, you know, to be running, right? Maybe I want to like run a mile, or maybe I want to run 2 miles, or maybe I want to snatch 100 pounds. I can't snatch 100 pounds. I wish I could. But you know, like, you know, it's whatever it is for you. And that's why in Bodies to Die For, I have Ashley. Ashley is the one who's overweight. I have her take up boxing. It's something that captivates her, and she starts doing it. And as she starts to do it, she starts to get strong. And she goes from being somebody who gets pushed around a lot and who's not very happy with herself to being somebody who's very confident and just living life instead of like waiting until she loses a certain amount of weight to like live her life. You know, she just starts to live her life like, oh,
yeah,
you know, so yeah.
So yeah, that's a good segue into Bodies to Die.
Yeah.
What can you share with us about sort of like how this book came to you, your motivation to write it,
mm-hmm.
and then eventually what it's all about?
Okay, great. Yeah. So I guess my motivation was, you know, was initially it was that Jillian Lynn, like that blow up, right? And when I saw this happening, I thought to myself, you know, why doesn't like somebody speak up, right? Like, why isn't there a sane voice out there? And this little tiny voice inside of me said, like, why don't you? Right. And, you know, at that time I had been writing for fitness magazines, but, you know, you're sort of preaching to the choir, you know, and, you know, if there was a way to sort of like get in other people's heads, kind of like the backdoor method, you know, what if I could like slip that message into a thriller? Plus, I was already really fascinated by like all the death threats to everybody. I was like, oh my God, like, what if somebody actually like kills Jillian Michaels, you know? So that, I guess that was inspiration. What it's about, it's about the clash of the fitness influencers, like the bikini bodybuilder, right? So that's what I was, right? I was bikini bodybuilding, but you know, I just didn't act like the local, the NPC, national professional, something or other. I didn't at that level, but there's another level, the IFBB, the International Federation of Bodybuilding. That the biggest competition of the year is the Olympia. And so I thought, you know, if I'm going to, when I first wrote it, I just did it for a local contest. But then, you know, they would say, go big or go home, right? So I ended up lifting that whole thing to the Olympia, which was that year, it was in Miami. And so I had the clash of the fitness influencers, they all had Instagram accounts or bikini bodybuilders with the fat activists. And they, that series of Fit Girl Murders results. And so it's following this thing as the countdown comes to the Olympia, and various fit girls start to die in kind of whacked out methods. You know, like things that they're promoting, which I won't say, but like, you know, like whatever they're promoting is like the way they go down. And it ends up culminating on, you know, the day of the Olympia when everything comes together. Yeah.
Wow. It sounds intense. Sounds intense.
Yeah. And I want to say too, it's not just about the, and it's very deliberate about this. It's not just about the clash of the fitness influencers with the fat activists. It's also the war on yourself. So originally this book was called Body Wars. And, you know, it's also the internal body war. So Gemma is the bikini bodybuilder, and she has this real internal struggle, you know, like, She used to be heavy in her head. She's got like this fat Gemma like lurking inside her that she's always afraid is going to come back and like destroy her life. So she's got this internalized struggle. So there's so many ways that, the underlying theme in this book is the war in women's bodies, the wars we engage in with each other, the wars we wage on ourselves. And there are just so many levels to it. You know, like Ashley's got this, you know, her mom's always on her about losing weight. You know, there's even the fit girls have the pressure, the fat girls have the pressure, like everybody's got this pressure, you know? And I just wanted to probe all of that. Yeah.
So I'm curious, like when you started to put pen to paper on this, You know, was it in your head that, yeah, hey, I'm going to write a full-length novel? Or did this start off as something else? Or like, I guess I want to get into like what your was in the early days.
So I just kind of like started, I wasn't sure. So I originally wrote a novel, I want to say like 10 years ago, about something else. I had written a thriller. And I queried it and everything. I never got an agent for it. I set it aside. And then I like went back to school and, you know, got the job, and I just was really busy. So I set it all aside. But I had actually been thinking about writing a thriller again. And I was actually in the middle of writing a different thriller. I was, it's actually a thriller I'm working on right now. I was maybe like 20,000 words into it or something when the Stilly and Mike book thing happened. And, it just kept calling to me, you know, and, I thought, well, maybe I'll finish the one I'm working on, and then I'll come back to the Jillian Michael one, right? But it just, I think it's the only one I was thinking about. And finally, I thought, well, you know what? Let me see if I can do, you know, I'm finally just going to set the other one aside. I'm going to run with this because I'm really inspired about this. So I thought, I'm going to try to write, and I'll see if there's enough material here, and I'll see how it goes. And I checked out probably like, maybe 25,000 words pretty fast. And that's when I was like, you know what? I think I got enough here to this. I think this will be a novel. And I just went with it. I wrote the whole thing.
So you had that experience of writing something before that didn't work out, started another one. And then, hey, the universe sends you this like gift in Jillian Michaels, and you don't let it go. How, you know, in terms of your path to publishing, how did you go about publishing this one? I know you mentioned querying agents for the first manual.
Yeah. So the first, and you know, if there are other potential writers listening to this podcast, you know, nothing's ever wasted. So you learn a lot from that initial failure, you know? So even though, you know, it's probably like 10 years in between there, I learned a lot from doing it the first time and not being successful with it. So the second time, you know, once I finished writing it, I took longer to refine it. I sent it out to some beta readers. Which I never did that for the first one, right? But this one I sent out to some beta readers. I got some beta reader feedback. I made it as good as I could on my own. There's certain things that I did know that I should have done in hindsight, but I didn't know it at the time. It would have made it easier, but I sent it out, got the feedback, fixed it up. And then when it was as good as I thought I could make it, I sent it to one editor who I knew, not an agent, but to an editor who I knew of that I wanted some feedback on. And it was somebody I admired. And she came back with feedback that was, and I'm very open to changing things, but she came up with some feedback that was so off course, and she wanted me to change something really fundamental to the book that I'm paralyzed. And I didn't do anything with it for like, I think almost like a couple months, like maybe a month and a half. I just sat on it, right? Do I rewrite the book, and do I do that or not? And I really thought about it, and I thought, well, you know what? I just don't want to write that book, right? This is my book. I don't want to write that book. And I ultimately decided, you know what, I just don't feel like writing it that way. I'm going to send it out. I'll send it out to one. So I looked on Query Tracker, which it tells you how fast people get back to different queries. So I picked an agent that got back to people like within like a couple days, right? I'm like, I'm going to send it to her. I'll see like what she says. And I'll see if she likes it. And then and I thought what I would do is that I would send it to 10 people, see if anybody liked it, a query. And then I would decide. And I sent it to her on a Sunday afternoon at like 1 o'clock. And at 1:05, she got right back to me. She asked for a full and a synopsis. And I didn't have a synopsis. So I spent Sunday afternoon writing a synopsis. I sent her the materials at 8 at night. But that gave me the, I thought, well, okay, right? And so then I sent it off to like 10 people. And then I kind of went on in that fashion, setting it off, you know, getting rejections or hearing nothing from anybody. I got some requests for some fulls, requests for some partials. And I had also been querying women because I thought that this was something that only women would respond to. I didn't bother to query men. But there was one agent who I was familiar with, who I really admire. And I thought, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to send it to this one guy, right? Just this one guy. You know, he's way too out of my league, but I'm going to send it to him anyway because, you know, you miss 100% of the shots you don't. So I sent it to him on a Saturday night at like 8 or 9 or 10 o'clock or something like that. And then I went to bed. I woke up at 2 in the morning. And if you've ever, and anybody who's listening to this who's in the querying trenches, you check your email constantly. So it's like 2 in the morning, what do? I look at my phone and check my email. And the agent's name was Shane Solero. He said, he's not my agent, but he got back to me. I was like, he had emailed me in the middle of the night. And he said, you know, this is actually pretty good. And he goes, you know, I'm actually not taking any clients right now. I can't take any new clients. But there's a newer agent that I know that might be interested in this. And he CC'd that newer agent. And he said, you know, let me send it his way. And I was just shocked out of my mind. And I sent him an email back thanking him. And then he even replied back again, like 15 minutes later. This is not like he's in California, but this is like 1 a.m, like his time. He like replies back and he says, goes, you know, one more thing. If you could get the tone right, I think he might have something here. He goes, I'm thinking the tone should be subversive. And so I wrote the word subversive on a post-it note and I put it in my bathroom vanity. And kind of like it's like my North Star. And that agent that he recommended, Jackson Keeler, he and I got in touch. And a couple of weeks, I sent Jackson the bull. And a couple of weeks later, Jackson signed me. So that was how it went down. That's how I got my agent.
That's a great story. That's,
yeah, it really is.
It shows your persistence and your smarts hearing as well. And and good for you on sort of going against your initial. Is to not query a dude. And
I just didn't think anyone would be, but then get this. So then Jackson and I, we work on it, you know, and again, if anybody is listening to this who writes a book, just understand that like you will rewrite this book a million times. Okay. So even after we come in, what did Jackson and I do? Rewrite the book a million times, right? So he and I rewrite the book a million times. Then he takes it out to different publishing imprints and he takes it to like all women except this one imprint, Blackstone. He took it to Daniel. I don't know if I pronounced Daniel's last name, Aaron Hart or something like that, who's the aquarium editor at Blackstone. I didn't think, you know, again, it's a guy. I didn't think he'd be interested. And Blackstone bought it. So, you know, in hindsight, I mean, you know, I guess it has, and we also, after we sold it, Jackson also set up a meeting with, we didn't sell it yet, the film rights, but we did have a meeting with a producer, a movie, you know, TV producer who was potentially interested. And that was a guy. And I will never forget during our Zoom call, he had read the book and he was talking about how it really spoke to him. Because when he was a kid, his parents just sent him up to the pet camp. And so it spoke to him too. So I guess it's not just for women, you know? So I was really pleasantly surprised by that.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a great success story. It's a great story.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I know authors, especially new authors, struggle with is building a platform.
Yeah.
And something that agents are looking for. And you had written for some, you know, articles in Fitness Magazine. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, like, how much did that come into play? Do you think that came into play?
Yeah.
To get an agent to take you on?
I think it lent some credibility to the subject matter I was writing about, you know, I also think it shows, especially for Strong Fitness Magazine, I've written a fair amount of articles for them. I think it shows that if you've written more than one article with the magazine, they I think it demonstrates that you could take feedback, right? I've probably written, I don't know, like 8 articles for Strong Fitness Magazine. So they want to keep working with me if I probably couldn't take feedback. So I think it demonstrates also that I'm somewhat committed to writing, right? I'm not just, I'm trying different things. I'm throwing myself out there. I think it just demonstrates a willingness to put yourself out there. You put yourself in a vulnerable position, putting yourself out there. And I think it just demonstrates that you're willing to do it, you know? Yeah. So I think it helped.
And, you know, you've been putting yourself in vulnerable positions your entire life. I mean,
yeah.
you know, you talk about some of your past career choices.
It's
hard to get much more vulnerable than, you know, in a way than that.
I mean, I'll go back to like being a stripper, right? You know, like I worked at Solid Gold and then the Dollhouse and so like these gentlemen's clubs, they're pretty nice. But you know, you're showing that you walk up to people and you ask if they want to dance and you get turned down, you know, left and right. You know, and I was actually really, I was one of their more successful strippers, but you still, even if you get turned down quite a bit and you just have to, you realize that, you know, so you might not be right for this guy, but this other guy over here, you're perfect for. And then it's kind of the same thing with writing. You know, you're not going to be for everybody and that's okay. Right. I don't need to write a book that everybody loves. I just need to write a book that, that at least one agent and one editor love, and that hopefully enough people out there, it speaks to them that they're, you know, they're willing to hear what I have to say.
Yeah. I mean, right when you said that, I'm thinking that's a parallel to writing.
It is.
Finding an agent, you know, you might not be right for everybody. You're going to get a lot of rejection.
Oh, tons.
But you're going to get your yes if you're persistent about it and you have something that's worth reading.
Yeah, I think so. I will say there's also some luck involved. I've read, I know some people who have queried, who I think have really good manuscripts, who haven't been able to get agents. So I think there's also, it's not just a good manuscript, it's that you got to find the right agent. And it also has to be, I hate to say this, I didn't even realize it at the time, but it has to be something that the agent thinks that they can sell.
Yeah.
You know, it has to be something that they, but at the time I wrote this, I wasn't thinking about that. But now that I'm more involved in this. I know people who have written books. They've even gotten agents, but they've got their books have gone all the way to acquisition, and acquisitions have, you know, marketing and publicity says, you know, we like it, but we don't think we can sell it.
Yeah.
You know, what a buzzkill that would be, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I know you mentioned changing the name of the Tell me the backstory to changing the name.
Just what killed me. The whole time in my head, it was Body Wars, right? It was Body Wars, Body Wars, Body Wars. And that's what it was. And I remember this very well. I was at work. The company I work for now, we're back in the office 3 days a week. And it must have been like a Tuesday or Wednesday or something. I'm in the office. And so I checked my email on my phone. Just to see what's going on. And lo and behold, my editor, you know, he's such a nice guy. Yeah, Daniel's such a nice guy. He doesn't tell me we hacked, but he says, you know, he's been in discussions with the other people at Blackstone. And apparently they're all in agreement. They all think, you know, these are people with experience, and they are concerned that Body Wars, it doesn't immediately say thriller. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you see something titled Body Wars, how do you know it's not nonfiction? Like, what's it about? And that if it doesn't make you pick it up, even if it doesn't make a reader pick it up, even if it's the perfect book form, if nobody picks it up, if the people who like thrillers don't pick it up, you know, you're not going to get them to read that book. So he asked very nicely if I would consider changing the title. And I said, I wrote back, let me see what I can come up with. And this is like in the middle of a work day, but I was like, you know, so I spent my lunch hour. I just kicked out, like, I probably sent him 20, 30 possibilities, but Bonus to Die For was at the top. I thought that this would probably be the best. He gave me like some criteria, and I can't remember what the criteria is, but there's certain things that a thriller title should be. There were like three different things. They had to be like one of this or this or this or something. And so I kicked on a bunch, and I sent them to him, and my agent was CC'd on it. And Daniel got back to me within like 15 minutes, and he said, I think Bodies to Die For is a winner. You know, are you okay with it? And I said, sure. And it was like all done. It was over, and that's what it was. And it took me months to get my head around it. You know, I'd be telling people, you know, I'd be out and about, and it would come up there, wrote a book, and people would say, oh, what's the title of it? And like, hold on, I got to remember. Oh, yeah. Because I kept wanting to call it Body Wars, but I finally got my head around it.
Well, I think it's another smart decision on your part to listen to those people who know what they're doing, right? So they have sold more books than you have. More books. So did the fact that you it wasn't a hard no for you, and then you were open to reconsidering it. And I do think, like, when I think thriller, To Die For does sound thriller to me versus body parts, which, could be the name of a reality TV show. It could be the name of something that is nonfiction. So as good of a title as it is, sometimes there's a better one out there.
Yeah. And now if I would have been, say, somebody like, say, Stephen King, you automatically know what he writes. Right. So you can date it whatever you want, right? Because the people see that author, they go, oh, well, I know what that is, right? But I'm not that person. So I need them to immediately know that it's a thriller.
Well, not yet. You're not that person yet.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Not yet. Okay.
There's a lot of runway ahead of you.
Okay.
I always like to get to know my guests a little bit more through pop culture. So I'm curious. When you were younger, Lori, what were some of your favorite things to watch on TV?
Charlie's Angels. I loved Charlie's Angels. That was like, and you know, I didn't watch a lot of TV. My parents they really kind of dribbled that out, right? So, but I watched, I saw like Love Boat, Fantasy Island, Dukes of Hazzard, Brady Bunch, Three's Company. But Charlie's Angels was my favorite, man. I loved that. When I was a kid, I wanted to be a Charlie's Angel when I grew up.
No, of course. Yeah. I mean, who wouldn't want to
this?
I will say, we're around the same generation. Because all those shows ring true for me. I mean, I will say I did not love the Charlie's Angels reboot when it hit the movies
Demi Moore.
Was it Demi Moore? I know.
She made a guest appearance. She made a guest appearance.
It was Lucy Liu.
I know she made. Yeah. But Demi Moore had a cameo. Yeah. Yeah, well, it wasn't quite as good as the original, but, I was a kid when I saw the original, so it had a huge imprint.
I felt the same way about Chips. So Chips was one of my favorite shows, and then they did a movie, and who did it? The guy, Dax Shepard did it, and I love him. I love his work.
Yeah.
It just, like, took away, like, the innocence of that show.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah. What about music? What did you like listening to?
When I was a kid or right now.
When you were a kid.
Oh, when I was a kid for music? I don't know, just like the radio, like pop radio, like whatever was on, whatever was like I went to, well, now I'm going to go like when I was like 16, like went to like a Def Leppard concert.
Nothing wrong with
that. Yeah, I just liked, what was that one song? We're Not Gonna Take It. Who's Twisted Sister?
Twisted Sister.
Yeah. I like Twisted Sister. I never went to that concert though, but I liked that. Rock and roll. Yeah.
I interviewed the guitarist for Twisted Sister on the show.
Really?
A few years ago. Yeah. Very, very, very smart man. Very smart guy.
I believe it.
And very interesting story too about the history of that band. But I digress.
Yeah.
I had Def Leppard. What year was that, would you say? Like 87-ish?
I think the Pour Some Sugar tour on was maybe, probably about 87. I remember wearing the t-shirt. I bought a t-shirt there, and I wanted to wear it to school the next day. And it said, Pour Some Sugar on Me. And I was wearing it at the breakfast table. My mom said, well, oh no, you can't wear that to school. And I was like, what? She didn't let me wear it because she thought it was just too... I don't know. And so I had to take it off. And then it's like the following week, I like smuggled it to school underneath the sweatshirt and wore it. But it just took away something because you got to wear the shirt the day after the concert, But
And then if you could go back in time and whisper some words of advice into your younger self's ear, maybe it's that 10-year-old in dance class who's seeing her instructor wire her jaw. Yeah. Like, what words of advice would you give your younger self?
To be true to yourself, to believe in yourself, and just to really focus on being strong. Because it's a world that if you're not strong, it will crater you, it will cave you, it will twist you until you conform to it. And there might be that might not be in your best interest, you know? So you got to sort of guide your true north and just stay there.
And if she said to back to you, what mm-hmm. is strong? How would you define strong for her?
So I do things, right? I think you have to be mentally strong. And that's why I'm such a huge fan of lifting weights, because I think it makes you mentally strong. It's mental strength. It's the ability to listen to other people, right? You're confident enough in yourself, in your abilities, that you're willing to take criticism, you're willing to take feedback. And maybe you reject it. Maybe something doesn't align with what your goals are, with what you want. Maybe something does. Maybe something that somebody suggests causes you to change course. But to trust yourself and to believe yourself, is you've got the critical thinking skills to get through this. You know, that's usually just what I fall back on. I'm old enough now that I figure I've had enough experience that I know if I steer the course, I can probably wiggle through it and be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Lori, where can people learn more about you if they want to follow you either on social media or go to mm-hmm. a website? Do you have anything you can share with the audience?
Yeah. So for Instagram, I'm at Lori Brand Writes and Lips. And my website is just Lori Brand Writes. And that's pretty much it. Well, I guess I'm on LinkedIn, right? Lori Brand, I'm on LinkedIn too. I don't really go to TikTok that much. I posted a few times, but I really kind of, I'm not real great about TikTok. No. Yeah.
I'll put links to all of that in our show notes, as well as links to where people can buy your book. This has been a fun conversation, Lori. Thank you for
stopping. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for letting me uncork your story.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Uncorking a Story. If you'd like more information about today's guest or to find out more about Mike, go to uncorkingastory.com. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Tune in every week to hear Mike Carlin uncork a new story.